हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 33. Yeah? Okay, Narada praises Indra. Is that what we were? Yeah. Sri Narada said, "You have surely received the Supreme Lord's mercy, because demigods like Surya, Chandra, and Yama, but to speak of the other rulers of planets, all obey your orders. Sages like me are your subjects, and the Vedas praise you as the Lord of the universe. For you bestow the fruits of religion and irreligion." Narada Muni begins by praising Indra's immense power and control, just as the king was considered above the brahmana by virtue of his pious kingdom. Similarly, Narada Muni points out the magnitude of Indra's authority. The principal demigods among them, the Vasus, Maruts, Rudras, and Adityas, all obey the orders of Indra. In the first of Shrutis, the Rig Veda, many of the hymns are prayers to Indra and descriptions of his glories. These Rikshuktas, the Indra hymns, praise him as the Lord of the universe. Narada agrees that this is the fitting, and in his own words gives evidence of Indra's sovereignty, his power to send pious souls to heaven and sinners to hell. Right. So again, we're working on these symptoms, because he's talking about the mercy of the Lord. So who has this mercy? So it's a matter of, these are symptoms of it, right? But naturally, devotees, they're not ever asking for these. That's the whole thing. It's not that they don't have them, but they're not asking for them. Right? That's the point. So, and that they have them is generally a symptom of things are going nicely. Okay? Krishna gives the facilities. They don't have them, it also doesn't matter. It's up to the Lord how it works. But the devotee's not asking for them. But naturally, the devotee in his humility, as we will see, we'll take it that this is, you know, we'll take it that they have some material perspective on it. Right? That's just normally how it goes. Does that make sense? He has facilities. If someone says, "Oh, Krishna's so kind, he's giving so much," no, I'm just a gross materialist. You know, they're going to say like this. This is just how it works. But yeah.
When Indra is considered the Lord of the universe,
yes,
who is Brahma, I mean, how do
you... Because you have the brahmanas and you have the administrators, right? So the brahmanas don't run it, right? Mm-hmm. The kshatriyas run it. So the demigods, basically, you can say, are kshatriyas. Mm-hmm. That's their position. That's their duties. Mm-hmm. Right? So Indra's the head of them. So he's the king of them. And so in that way, then they take care of everything.
And Lord Brahma's like...
But they're like the Brahmins. They're above that. So those that live on Satyaloka are basically outside this circle, though they function within the capacity of the administration. Just like the Brahmins work within the rules and everything administration, but technically they're not really under the administration. Right? That's what we'll see coming up here. 11. How wonderful that Lord Narayana has become your younger brother, born of the same womb. Honoring the ways of civilized life, he always treats you with respect. Sri Parikit said, The sage among the demigods thus profusely declared the extreme good fortune of Indra. As he chanted Indra's glories, he played his veena and danced. Aditi and Kasyapa had 12 sons, of whom Indra was the 11th. Bhamadadeva, also known as Aditya Urukrama, was the 12th. Footnote 21. Now please hear me as I describe the descendants of Aditi in chronological order. In this dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, descended by his plenary expansion. The names of the sons of Aditya followed are as follows: Vivasvan, Aryama, Pusha, Tvashta, Savita, Daga, Data, Vidata, Varuna, Mitra, Shatru, and Urukrama. Right, so Shatru is Indra. So that's Bhagavatam 6, 38 and 39. Right, and Urukrama is Vamanadeva. So Vivasvan is the sun god. Aryama is the one who, he's basically, you could say, one of the main players in Yamaraja's court. Aryama means when Yamaraj is, you know, busy, Aryama runs the court. So he's quite elevated. Tvashta, that's Tvashta, his father. He's one of the, okay, what is it? I think Vishwarupa is his son. He chanted the mantras like Savita, Daga, Varuna, Mitra, like this. So that we, you know, they're not small timers. Yeah. Indra's greatness is spiritual as well as material, because the Lord of all lords becomes his brother. Not only is the Lord born of the same womb, but he accepts the inferior role of a younger brother. In that role, he teaches the rules of behavior by his own example, showing, for instance, how a younger brother would respect his elder brother. Lord Vamanadeva submissively does what Indra tells him. Does Indra control the Lord with his devotion? Indra will answer in the next section. Right? So then that's the thing, is that you have these symptoms, but then you have the particular devotion itself. And what is the attitude? Because he's having this association with the Lord, because he's managing the universe on the Lord's behalf. So naturally then that support will be there. So the manvantar, which Vamanadeva is, then is always, what do you call it? Protecting Indra and Indra's interests, right? To see that everything is working nicely, the demons aren't getting out of hand, and things are functioning nicely. Yes?
It seems a little odd to me that some devotees get these things wrong. They become Shaivites or demigod worshipers. It's all here, it's all explained.
It's all what you want.
Yeah.
You understand? It's just a matter of what you want is what you get.
You can find
them. Yeah. So, you know, as we say, it's like Mayapur, it's a spiritual place. You want to hear kirtan, you want to hear discussions about the Lord, you want to, you know, associate with devotees, serve devotees, very easily available. But if you want the latest gossip from the West that they haven't even heard of in America, you can get it here. Like that. So whatever you want, you can get. It's just a matter of what you want. Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that, you know, the residents of Vrindavan, you know, that point is being made by, what's his name? Who's making the point? That was Holmes, right? That was Holmes? Distracted by Holmes. I think so, but I'm not sure. There's a whole bunch of them, they all look very similar. What is it? What was our point we were discussing? Oh, you were saying about the Shaivites and... Okay, that there's a discussion between Srivas Thakur. I'm not sure who else. Maybe it was Surup Damodar. Yeah, because they're senior. And so Srivas Thakur was making the point of how nice Vaikuntha is and how opulent and all that, while Vrindavan's just, you know, trees and sticks and dust and, you know, that's, you know, no big opulence. You know, then the point's made that, you know, trees and dust and all that, that's the source of all the opulence of Vaikuntha. So it gives all the opulence that is there in Vaikuntha, but the Brajbasis themselves, they go to the Kalpavriksha trees and only get some fruit. And they approach the Sarabi cows and only take some milk. Even though they could have so many things, they don't. They're not interested. That's the whole thing. If you're interested in pure devotion, that's what these points point out, is you could get this from the Lord, but they're not taking it. They want pure devotion. Not that they don't have those things. It's just that's not their interest. Like Sudama Vipra, his only interest was to please the Lord. Now, if he has the opulence of Indra, his interest is still just exactly the same. And he had nothing, it's still the same. Right? Kunti, they've been emperors of the world. Right? She's always been in the family. She's come from, you know, Dwarka. Then she comes to Hastinapur. Right? So they're always in that position. But for her, the interest is the devotion to Krishna. That's the... Does that make sense? So then the point is that that's the nature of the pure devotee. So how to understand the symptoms of it? Right? What are the symptoms? So we've started off with a little bit of a facility and following to a bigger facility and following till, you know, basically the whole universe as facility and following. So, you know, so but at the same time, as all that is there by the Lord's mercy. Right? But at the same time, you know, then there's the element that there's something more, there's something greater. Right? Yes?
If Indra is a post, so there are many living entities who have the position of Indra.
Yeah, 14 times in a day of Brahma, they change.
So
basically that means 504,000 Indras in a lifetime of Brahma.
So I suppose that some Indra are more devotee than others.
That may be.
But here we see...
There's the general principle, because they're talking about what's the situation here. Right? But the whole point is that then, as you go, different people take the post. Right? And so then, but Vamanadeva is always there. He's always there, because he's one of the sons of Aditi. But whether he's the Manvantara avatar, that's another thing. Is that... Yeah, because every Manu, then there's a Manvantara avatar.
So when
it is
said here that Indra's greatness is spiritual, that's why that's not there. It's because it is a brother's...
Because that's there, but the point is they're devotees. That's why they're in the position. A demon can't get the position of Indra unless he's a devotee. Like that. So Bali Maharaj will be the Indra, not this one, I think the one after. Either the next one or the one after the next one, I'm not sure which. You know. But if that's there, that means he's being Indra, you know, having the opulence of Indra for longer than Indra has it. Because he has it now, and then he'll have it for the next Indra also. So he has it for this Indra and the next Indra, unless it's the one after that, then he, you know, at least three Indras he has that opulence. Like that. Yes.
When we say that Vamana, he was always there for Indra.
Yes.
He was always staying there. But then Indra would refute it, saying that it's not because of devotion. But nothing else can force the Lord to be there except for devotion.
Yes, but then naturally the devotee is not going to look at it that, yes, you know, yes, because the Lord's there with you because of, you know, your devotion. Yes, I'm so devotional, you know. And you're so fortunate because the Lord wishes you. Yes, I'm the most fortunate. It's so sad for everybody else, you know. You know what I'm saying? So they're going to say, because the whole idea is that we're not, it's not as much about the facts as about just how the, you know, you want to establish how of all the devotees the gopis are the best. So naturally you have to go up through some, because some will say, the Brahman, the king, the Indra, they will say these things. That's why these are being mentioned. Like, we may not talk like that. You know what I'm saying? But those from the Vedic culture who have knowledge of the whole system and know all these the different symptoms and everything, they'll look at it this way. But then the idea is that its actual purpose is to establish the, you know, the residence of Braja is the highest, and of the residence of Braja, then the gopis. Yeah. It's that makes sense. Yeah. So that's what is what is will be happening. You know, because each one is pointing out how it's not a matter of that he's not, see, what Nart Muni is saying is true. But there are devotees that there's more elements of the Lord's mercy. Because it's like it said, the real mercy is not that you have facility, but it's by the mercy of the Lord. Right? Bali Maharaj is making that point, is that he's offering that to Prahlad Maharaj. So that means it's his mercy. But he's pointing out his real mercy is pure devotion. That makes sense. So there must be, otherwise why is he there? You know. But it doesn't mean that there's not something higher. Yeah. Okay. Indra refutes Indra's Narada's praise, 13-29. Indra then welcomed Narada and in a soft voice humbly said, "My dear Narada, expert in the arts of the Gandharvas, why are you making fun of me?" Gandharvas are clever and tricky. A person well trained in their art certainly knows how to manipulate others with false praise and ridicule. Indra knows that Narada is not an ordinary Gandharva, but Indra is enjoying a humorous exchange because he's expert in music and all that. In other words, music descends through Narada. Like the Pancharatra, also music. Because originally there's what's called jatis, which is a group of notes. Because you have 22 notes, and so the notes each have their particular mood. So the jatis, there's 18 jatis that have particular combinations of notes. These are the main. But there's no, you have to know the mood so that you understand how the notes work. There's no direction. Right? It means you're so, it's just like, let's say you're cooking. You know taste so well. Then you can judge whether you put more or less of this of a particular how you say spice or combinations of things or volumes of things while you're cooking, right? You know, like just generally you put a little hing for some background, but then there's a preparation called hingi where it makes it a very prominent flavor, but it's very very how you say tricky to do that because too much hing or ruin the preparation. So this has to have so many other things in there that you get the strong hing flavor, but it balances. So to be able to do these things, that means you have to know what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. You have to understand what you're working with. So in that way, every time you could use the notes differently and bring out something more because of the nature of how it's working. So there's no rules. You just have to know the principle, right? Because that's difficult and people wouldn't understand. Nard Muni, he gave the system of ragas, right? So that you have the six ragas and the raginis, like that. And then you know, all their derivatives. Does that make sense? So in this way, you could say he's expert in the arts of the Gandharvas because it's actually, you know, technically, he's the one that's revealing it. At the same time, as we see, you know, there's the clever and tricky aspect. Are you unfamiliar with that, with what ruling heaven means? Don't you know how many times we demigods had to flee heaven in fear of the daityas? Because you say, you have all this facility, all this and everything there, and he says, you know, but so many times we have to run away. One of them, Bali, once even took over as Indra. He appointed demons to all the posts like sun god and moon god and took for himself many shares of sacrifice. And they're able to do it and get away with it. You know? So he has qualified people, you know, somebody's running the sun, somebody's running, you know. Narada has just told Indra, the sun god and other rulers of planets obey your orders. To counter this, Indra questions the value of the demigod's controlling power, which the demigods are always in anxiety of losing. Indra insists that sovereignty over the three worlds is far from mercy. The Bhagavatam supports this. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this material world. When one possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increase his enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Right? In other words, those elements are engaged in the Lord's servants. But to endeavor for them separately, that's not important. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. So the whole point is this, gaining the pure devotional service, that's the real symptom. The others that may be there, you may have facility or not, but the point is if there's pure devotion, you don't get distracted by it. If you're distracted by it, that means there's some element of some mix. Right? So in other words, Narad Muni takes the pious, the glorified part of the situation, and the devotee is always taking the negative part of the situation. Yes, yeah. So there's always that combination. Does that make sense? Because every situation engaged in the Lord's service is glorious, not engaged in the Lord's service is useless. So Narada is going to take the part engaged in the Lord's service, and the devotee will take the part, you know, it's useless. Because they'll say, I'm not a devotee, so therefore, you know, what's the point of it? You know. So Shastra's there for both. Is this way you learn all the different aspects about devotional service. He also questions whether it's actually glorified by having such uncertain rulers as his order carriers. Indra ashamedly remembers how he almost died from hunger and thirst while Bali usurped and enjoyed Indra's shares of sacrifice. Indra thus responds to the southern king's statement, their food is the nectar of immortality. Right? So yes, you get it, but you know, you may also not get. You know. He almost starved to death. So, because that's the thing, from here we always think that it's so great up there. But when you get up there, then it's not. So that's another thing that this shows, is actually the real nature of all these situations throughout the universe. Because otherwise we'll think, oh wow, they got it, it's all happening there. Because you only point out your major things, because it's like the material world is a place of misery, right? And so you point out the uniqueness of a certain place, right? They got huge, mango tree. The mangoes are, you know, without skin or seed. When they fall off and hit the ground, there's so much of them, so it creates a river. The banks of that river is gold, so those different individuals come and take that gold and make all the ornaments they want from it. Okay. But it doesn't mean they don't suffer. You know? We don't talk about someone got hit by one of those mangoes, or they fell in the river and, you know, it was a big trip to get them out, or, you know, no matter how much gold he brought home, his wife said, that's all you brought? You know, so it doesn't matter. He's still going to suffer. Right? You make your chariot out of solid gold like that, and as you get in it with your wife, then, you know, your neighbor comes by with a bigger chariot, you know. Yeah, and then as they go by, then the wife, you know, hey. You know, and, you know, back to the river, you know.
It's like famous people on this planet.
It's like that. It looks great from here, but in reality, you know, because you only see them getting out of the car, stepping on the carpet, all the people want to take the pictures. A few of the tabloids have what they look like the morning after.
Yeah.
You know, like that. But then there's idea, well, they had a good time. But then there's times when there are no parties and nobody cares and their movie flopped or the politics goes against them or, you know, it's just like that and it's bad. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's not good. Yeah.
They endeavor to get the box of timbre, you have to perform so much piety,
right,
etc.
Right.
So it means the suffering should be less.
No, the suffering should be more. You get more, you suffer more. You have less, you suffer less. That's the way it goes. It's just like this.
No, they get inspired to do that work.
Yes. But they're inspired by what they're going to get from it. Everybody kind of finesses the other side. It's just like this. You have a one-room studio, okay? How long does it take to clean? Okay, how much electricity? Okay, now you have a big, you know, how you say, you know, like 12-bedroom mansion, you know, 6-car garage, you know, the whole thing, the lawns, the things, your own, you know, your own swimming pool, your own golf course and all that. How much electricity? How much does it take to maintain? Yeah, so the point is you have it, but you have to take care of it. You know, before is this, you know, you just, you know, fix the bed, move a few pillows around, sweep this, throw that out, throw out the garbage, you're done. Now you got to manage all these servants and other people and this and that, and then they always want a raise, they're always sick, they got to take the kid to the doctor, you know. Yeah, you know. So then it doesn't work out, right? Yeah, you know, you have all the cars, but this one has to be fixed. You wanted to take the Bentley, but then, you know, something happened, and, you know, it's the daughter's prom, so she's got the Bentley, but you have to go to this other program, so you're going to have to go and, you know, something else that doesn't quite match, you know. Right? You know. Does that make sense? Okay, you show up at the big, you know, a formal black tie event, you know, you show up in your Hummer. Not so good. Right? You know, you're supposed to show up in your Bentley. You know.
And they crack down hard on these things in those social circles.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, you know, you brought your off-road vehicle, you know, for a long dress and everything. You get out, you know, it's a trip. Getting in and out of one of those, that's a trip. You know what I'm saying? So these are the problems that they have. Right? You know, and then when they do get there and everything, they sit down at the table because you have your names are all put, and then you're sitting right next to the person you've hated since the second grade. And why? Because her husband's richer than yours, and so then you have to, you know, behave yourself because your husband's trying to work out a you know, some kind of deal with him and something like this, and so. And they know it, and they're running you through the ringer, and they're having a good time doing it. You know, and you have to do it, and everybody else at the table is just sitting there and enjoying it inside, just laughing. You know, but at the same time, the laughing is they could be next, so it's not exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And now because of this, you know, it's $2,000 a plate. You can't even enjoy it because the person next to you keeps on talking and this and that. And if you break eye contact, that'll be bad. So you can't even eat. So you paid $2,000, you know, bucks and you can't even eat. That's your plate. Then you have your husband's plate. Then the two kids' plate. You know? You know what I'm saying? So if you ask them, it's not so great. So they're thinking, if we're more rich than we are, then we can, you know, people like this won't bother us.
Yeah, then we can bug the
others. Yeah, then we won't be, you know, we'll get our own table, you know, like that.
We'll brand ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. in the sense of, that's it, whatever you have, there's always the idea, if I'm in that category, I have more. You know, but the guys that are billionaires, they go to bed with $90 billion. They wake up in the morning and they're only worth $30 billion. You lost $60 billion while you were sleeping. You know? Now, you're going to feel bad. Right? The other guys, you know, he feels bad. You know, he just lost $100 on something he wished he had. These guys, $60 billion. So that's the problem. Wherever it is, it sounds good, but at the same time, it's, I think it's not so good.
What about this?
You get the idea, though. He looks kind of Indian. He's from the West. He is, yeah. Otherwise, they wouldn't wear a hoodie without a shirt under it. Detachment. But they have to follow, they have their own culture they have to follow, right? Narad Muni got in trouble in his previous two lives back, that he's sitting there, they're out on Hari Nam, but he's just singing and impressing the girls. So the other demigods is kind of like, you know, you don't understand the program here. So then they cursed him to become a Shudra. Right? Because of his position and all that, he can impress so many girls. So then put him in a position where nobody, girls, are going to be impressed. They don't need to be. See, they don't have the rules that we have. They're there to enjoy. It's just like, you know, you win a weekend at, how do you call it, Ibiza, or however you call it. I can't even, it's everyone.
Huh?
Ibiza. Ibiza, that's right. That's how the locals would say it. Okay, you've won a weekend at Ibiza. So, is that, you know, we're talking about detachment here? No. You know, but you can't, you know, burn down the hotel you're in or, you know, do anything too stupid.
It's good these guys are not the lords of the universe.
Yes, yes, sure. Yes, that's it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole element is that you have these facilities. You use them properly, they'll maintain. You use them badly, then it'll burn up your piety. You know, it's just like you go there, you have your money, you can get through the whole weekend quite nicely and buy some things, take some things back, go a little, you know, touring around. But if you go there the first night, you go crazy, get drunk, and go to the gambling casino and lose everything, then, you know, you got a problem. You're going to sit in your room for the, you know, through the, yeah. So that's the whole thing. It's just a matter of the piety, you know. You use it properly, it works. And if you don't use it properly, then it doesn't work.
It seems that it is difficult for the mother to
go to
work. It's difficult to make advancement in spiritual life.
That's there. That's why it's not recommended. That's why the recommendation is on the earthly planet, that's where you make your effort. Because these other places, you have opportunity because the Lord is there. But the problem is who takes it? That's the thing. You know, let's say like, there's so many nice programs going on in the temple and kirtans and like this. At the same time, you know, four of your best friends, it's all their weddings are happening that week. So how much, you know, spiritual activities you're going to be doing. You know, you're just hopefully getting your rounds done, and the rest of the time you're running around making arrangements and everything. Right? You understand? So, like that. It's even though the opportunity is there, generally you're distracted by other frivolities. Does that make sense? Yeah.
this situation particularly, coming more like mine, there's so many spiritual problems that are going on constantly.
Yes.
How many people are taking part?
That's the point. It's a matter of taste.
So the same is with the demigods?
Basically. But there it's a matter of they perform pious activities, they're getting the results of those pious activities. So because there is that aspect of fruitive element, right, then there's going to be a tendency to take advantage of the fruitive results. That's why we're saying they're neophytes. Because if someone is an advanced devotee, one generally doesn't appear as demigods. One takes birth in the family of devotees. Right? Even then, we see that they don't necessarily take it seriously. You know what I'm saying? So that's the... In one... Okay. In one instance, Bali chastises Indra for having deluded himself into thinking that he is the controller. Bali Maharaj replied, "All those present on this battlefield are certainly under the influence of eternal time, and according to their prescribed activities, they are destined to receive fame, victory, defeat, and death, one after another. Seeing the movements of time, those who are cognizant of the real truth neither rejoice nor lament for different circumstances. Therefore, because you are jubilant due to your victory, you should be considered not very learned. You demigods think that your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory. Because of your ignorance, saintly persons feel sorry for you. Therefore, although your words afflict the heart, we do not accept them." Since Bali Maharaj's rebukes were truthful, King Indra did not at all become sorry, just as an elephant beaten by its driver's rod does not become agitated. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:11-4-11. So here it is. He has to be, even though he's victorious, he still is rebuked by the enemy, and it's true. Right? It's not just, you know, he's saying something nasty just because of that. You know, they're speaking... You know, so that's Balaraj is not saying, you know, oh, you're so this. He's just saying you're missing the point. Right? So Balaraj, as the king of the demons, he's just taking care of the demons. Right? So he's not putting someone in as the sun god who can't properly do the job. Right? You know, he's putting in a proper person. You know, you don't give a fancy car to a punk kid. You know, they're going to do something stupid. So you put qualified people. Our father and mother then performed many severe austerities, by which they satisfied the Supreme Lord Achyuta. The Lord responded by appearing as my brother, in a mere partial expansion of himself, Amshamatrena. Indra makes light of the Lord's reciprocation with him, since the Lord answered the request of Indra's parents only after some delay, and then was unwilling to manifest himself fully in his original form. So now he's pointing out is I'm only dealing with this swamsa aspect. You know, there's less power. And it's not because I'm so great that he's my brother. It's because my parents did austerity and prayed for him. So he came for them. And then coming, he's only a partial manifestation. Right? So he's pointing out is that, you know, you're saying I'm the topmost, but you know, so this is also giving an indication here about the element of mercy, that here there's you're dealing with just a portion of a portion, then there's dealing with a portion, then you're dealing with the original. So that's also the aspect of greater mercy is, and which aspect of the Lord's reciprocating with you as. Does that make sense? Just like we're worshiping Radha and Krishna, but factually, we're worshiping Lakshmi Narayan. That's because we're not worshiping in prema. So, therefore, because we're following rules in worshiping the Lord, he's reciprocating through the rules right? So that makes Lakshmi Narayan. But at the same time, is the effect that we feel is that of Radha and Krishna. So that means that special mercy. Does that make sense? Because even though they're dealing as Lakshmi Narayan, it's still Radha and Krishna dealing as Lakshmi Narayan. It's not that Radha and Krishna say, we're out of here, and then Lakshmi Narayan, okay, we'll do it, you know. Yes, because, I mean, here you're dealing with Swayam Krishna, you know, with his Srut Shakti. You're not going to get better than that.
No, that's pretty
good. Yeah. You're okay. You're cool. Right? So he's pointing out different elements here. It's not that because of Indra's devotion, that's why he appeared. Right? Yes.
This is Indra's point.
Not so much, because whether Indra was even worried about this or not is another thing, right? So this is his parents. But the point is Indra gets the benefit because they've appeared in the same family. So you can look at it from that side as, of course he's gotten benefit. See, we have to be able to distinguish there is the positive ways you can look at it, because it is devotion. But there's also, the only reason we're looking at the non-positive ways is because of the jai. Because of the... wanting to show what is higher. Didn't catch that. Means we're showing what is the mercy, but at the same time as we're also showing what's more mercy. So it's not so much about the negative that is the point. The positive is there. We only bring up the negative if it's being, at least at this point, compared to pure devotion. Is that... Yes. 17. And even then, instead of killing those enemies, he only embarrassed me, returning my kingdom after taking it from Bali with a deceptive request for charity. Now, it's not that he went in there and just wiped them out. He just went in there and tricked them. An aristocratic lord like Indra might feel demeaned by such treatment. Instead of fighting for the demigod's rightful property in an honorable way, Lord Achyuta resorted to tricks. He disguised himself as a dwarf, asked Bali for just as much land as 3 of his steps could cover, and, when he obtained that charity on a pretext, made himself larger than the universe. To add insult to injury, Bali Maharaj became even more opulent than Indra as a result. So he got his kingdom back, but it's still Bali ended up as having more opulence. So there's the thing, is you're becoming Indra because of his position. Here there's someone with greater position. Okay, from Bhagavatam. Being very pleased with Bali Maharaj for giving all his possessions, the Lord returned his kingdom and made him richer than the opulent king Indra. My dear king, Bali Maharaj donated all his possessions to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadeva, but one should certainly not conclude that he achieved his great worldly opulence in Bilaswarg as a result of his charitable disposition. When one becomes a pure devotee in love, he may also be blessed with a good material position by the will of the Supreme Lord. However, one should not mistakenly think that the material opulence of a devotee is the result of his devotional service. No, it's just the Lord's mercy. His devotional service, the result of that is it pleases the Lord. How do you go? The real result of devotional service is the awakening of pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which continues under all circumstances. So the actual real effect is, we're looking at devotional service, then it awakens prema, But that's a secondary attribute. But that's the prime. That's your main secondary attribute. Getting facility and all those other things, it's just the Lord's mercy. I mean, the Lord gives that. But it's not because he did devotional service. That's why he's like this. But otherwise, then one would get disappointed in, I'm performing devotional service. Where's my facility? Okay. So that's the... Does that make sense? In other words, we're going into real religion here rather than the material. That I do this, I get that back. I put in this effort, I get this result back. No, it's I work to please the Lord, the Lord's pleased, that's what I'm looking for. And then if anything else is there or not there, then that's secondary. That's not a primary concern for the devotee. Does that make sense? So this may kind of slightly turn upside down our concept of the devotional process and how it should work. But it just depends what you want. Do you want like what Indra has? Or do you want, you know, more of what, you know, Bali Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, because for them it's pure devotion. Sanatana Goswami, yes, keeps the Chintamani stone in the garbage pile. Right? You know, because what is he going to do with it? Right? Because garbage means what you don't use. It doesn't mean that garbage is bad. You know what I'm saying? But the point is this, it's not what you can use. It's just like, let us say I have so many possessions. It's time to thin things down. So generally I'll go through anything that is useless, you know, that I can say, you know, it's broken, doesn't work, too old, you know, this and that, you know, something I don't like, that I'll get rid of. But anything that's valuable, even though I don't require it, I keep. But the real point is you have to get rid of that also. That's where charity comes in. Throwing out garbage isn't called charity. Right? Things that are valuable, but you don't need. That's what you give in charity. Like you've had the thing for 2 years, you never use it. But you could use it. It could do so many things. Yes, that's why that thing's good to give in charity. Because you're not using it, but somebody else could. Huh? You might use it, but it might go into the category of, you know, old, broken, and doesn't work anymore by the time you do get around to using it. Right? No? Yes. So that's why then there's always the element of giving in charity. Right? Does that make sense? So for Sanatana Goswami, what is not useful in his devotional service, that's kept in that pile over there. Now, if someone can get some benefit from that pile, you know, the goats will come and eat some of the stuff, and someone else might rummage through and take away what they like. So this guy came and took the Chintamani stone. So then, you know, everyone gets what they want. Okay. As opposed to vanquishing him in a glorious battle, why does the all-powerful Lord resort to making a quote-unquote deceptive request of Bali? The Lord explains why to Aditi. O mother of the demigods, in my opinion, almost all the chiefs of the demons are now unconquerable, for they are being protected by Brahmanas, whom the Supreme Lord always favors. Thus, the use of power against them will not at all be a source of happiness. Yet, because I have been satisfied by the activities of your vow, O goddess Aditi, I must find some means to favor you, for worship of me never goes in vain, but certainly gives the desired result according to what one deserves. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:17, 16-17. Right, so now you're talking about more, before in the fifth canto we're talking about, you know, Bali Maharaj is making the point about pure devotion. But, you know, you're talking about the positions and governance and all these different things like this. Well, here in the eighth canto, now they're talking about just the Lord's reciprocation with the devotee. Srila Prabhupada comments, when a person is favored by Brahmins and Vaishnavas, no one can defeat him. Even the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not interfere when one is protected by a Brahmana. It is said, go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. The Lord's first inclination is to give all benedictions to the cows and Brahmanas. Therefore, if Brahmanas favor someone, the Lord does not interfere, nor can anyone interfere with the happiness of such a person. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.17.16 purport. Right. So, because they're doing things right, Krishna is recommending you please the Brahmins, follow the Brahmins, take their advice. They're doing that. That's why they're getting the results. Because we see at the same time, the demigods weren't doing that. Therefore, it was so easy to take away their kingdom. Right? So that's the point. Krishna doesn't get involved. So now how is he going to do it? He has to do it by trick. Because to go in there and fight with these persons and disturb, how will one be satisfied because of the element of the Brahmins and everything like that? They're doing everything properly. Because the demons will think, I'm doing everything properly. Why is the Lord interfering? You know, he's recommending that you follow the Brahmins. We're following. Why is he getting involved? Because the demons know the Lord won't bother them as long as they perform their duties. They don't perform their duties, okay, then there's something to discuss. Right? Does that make sense? Because they look at it more externally than, the demigods. So then they're only going to be good and nice because if there's not a thought that being good gets good result, then people will just be bad. Right? So that's the whole point. Is that it's so why Krishna won't get involved in that? So he has to use trick. Right? He's as a Brahmin, they respect Brahmins. He comes and begs for charity, they are giving charity. You know, but in that then, you know, he takes a bit more than they expect. Like that. But Bali Maharaj, because he's a devotee, then it works out glorious. 18. We residents of heaven are tainted with faults like rivalry and jealousy. For such acts as killing Brahmins, we get entangled in the reactions of sin. Okay. Indra, footnote 22, Indra absolves himself from sin by distributing it. Although Indra was so powerful that he could neutralize the sinful reactions for killing a Brahmin, he repentantly accepted the burden of these reactions with folded hands, right? Because it's not right, so he's accepting. He suffered for 1 year, and then to purify himself, he distributed the reactions for his sinful killing among the earth, water, trees, and women. In return for King Indra's benediction that ditches in the earth would be filled automatically, the land accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions for killing a Brahmana. Because of those sinful reactions, we find many deserts on the surface of the earth. Right? So that means that the benediction is, you know, how you say, the trenches in France are no longer there. But the reaction is now the other part of France down in Morocco, that's all desert. Yeah, so... you get both. Right? Yeah. Works out. Right? So there's a benediction and then there's a reaction. So there's always balance. So if you're not looking for benediction, there's no reactions. That's the whole point. Yeah. In return for Indra's benediction that the branches and twigs would grow back when trimmed, the trees accepted 1/4 of reactions for killing a Brahmana. These reactions are visible in the flowing of sap from trees. Therefore, one is forbidden to drink the sap, right? So unless it's purified by cooking or things like that, then it's not used. Like that. It has to be purified. Make sense? Yes? No? Right, yes. Okay, well, then that's good. We'll continue this pattern of it getting less. In return for Indra's benediction, okay, that they would be able to enjoy lusty desires continuously, even during pregnancy, for as long as sex is not injurious to the embryo, women accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions. And as a result of those reactions, women manifest the signs of menstruation every month. So that's less than sad. It's not as bad as deserts. Following your logic. Okay? And in return for King Indra's benediction that water would increase the volume of other substances with which it was mixed, water accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions, right? Because you can put water and you don't really know it's there.
Sometimes.
Yeah, well, if you put too much, yes, that's it.
Fried the coconut chutney, it was too...
No, but if you cooked it, then you wouldn't notice. Yeah. It means if you put... Unless it's an uncooked thing, if you put then water, then you don't notice. But if it's something cooked, then it has to be cooked with the water. Yes. Therefore, there are bubbles and foam in water. When one collects water, these should be avoided. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9, 6-12. Where was that? Yes, we get entangled in the reactions of sin. So he's pointing out, as even as demigods, for such acts as killing brahmanas, right, which is the worst thing you can do. Yeah. And we live in constant fear of losing our posts, right? Because even though they're there, but you don't know how much piety you have, if it's enough to keep you there. Like how well it was done, if there was any mistake. You know, you did the 100 Ashwamedha yagyas, but, you know, the horse was a little too small or had a spot on it or, you know, something, then therefore you get some... That's the problem with karma conduct. It's not everything's exactly perfect, then there is a reaction.
And you notice after or during the sound, or when you don't get the result.
Anytime you notice it, it will create anxiety, so you don't have to worry. So, because if you had before, you think this will happen, and then well, this is happening, you know, or that did happen, you know, so you know. That's the point. Material world means anxiety. Yeah? It's just... So what happiness do we truly enjoy? Yeah? The southern king had said that the demigods are always worshipable by men. He had cited several reasons for this, but here Indra answers. He refutes the statement that the demigods are fixed in goodness by reminding Narada that they are quarrelsome. Footnote 23. The demigod Yamaraj also points out that being fixed in goodness by itself does little to ensure the Lord's mercy. I, Yamaraj, Indra, the king of Hendron, Niriti, Varuna, Chandra, the moon god, Agni, Lord Shiva, Pavana, Lord Brahma, Surya, the sun god, Vishvasu, the eight Vasus, Sadhya, the Maruts, the Rudras, the Siddhas, and Marichi, and other great rishis engaged in maintaining the departmental affairs of the universe, as well as the best of the demigods headed by Brihaspati, and the great sages headed by Bhrigu, are all certainly freed from the influence of the two base material modes of nature, namely passion and ignorance. Nevertheless, although we are in the mode of goodness, we cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then is to be said of others who, under illusion, merely speculate to know God? Right? So they're situated in goodness. They're working for God. They still don't know who He is. So goodness is not enough, but it's a good platform to perform devotional service from. Passion and ignorance isn't recommended. Right?
Too much in the way.
Yeah, it's too distracting because it's fruitive and destructive. Like that. So only goodness is uplifting, but it doesn't mean that you'll know God through it. But as far as something as position to serve God from, then it's a better position. He defeats the statement that they are quote unquote sinless by recalling how he killed Vritra, Vishwarup, and others. 24. Indra, while attempting to recapture the heavenly Amrita, also once tried to kill Garuda. And while that foremost of all ranges of sky, that first of winged creatures, Garuda, was coursing through the air after wrestling the Amrita, Indra hurled at him his thunderbolt. And this is after he's leaving with the Amrita. He's already gone in and taken the Amrita. Right? Not means they have all these poisonous snakes. Just by looking at you, they'll kill you. So you have to distract their attention. You know, you have this chakra sharpened like a razor that's spinning. You have all kinds of things that are there. And Garuda gets rid of all these. I forget what he did to the snakes, but, you know, snakes aren't a problem for him. He eats them, right, you know. chakra became small, went inside, and then became big and broke it and all this. Well, he got through everything, took the nectar, and is flying away. Right? Then Indra hurled at him his thunderbolt. Then Garuda, the lord of birds, struck with the thunderbolt, spake laughingly unto Indra, engaged in the encounter, in sweet words, saying, I shall respect the Rishi Dadichi, of whose bone the Vajra hath been made. I shall also respect the Vajra, and thee also of 1,000 sacrifices. I cast this feather of mine, whose end thou shalt not attain. Struck with thy thunderbolt, I have not felt the slightest pain. So he drops a feather just out of respect for Dadichi the thunderbolt and the position of Indra. You know, that he's done so much. One is the position to be respected, but the individual themselves has done all these sacrifices and that. So one has to respect sacrifice, right? As it mentions, knowledge, influence, sacrifice, how you say, relations, age, wealth, these are all things to be respected. So he's respecting here Indra's sacrifice, right? But greater than Indra's sacrifice was Dadichi's, right? Like that. And having said this, the king of birds cast a feather of his, and all creatures became exceedingly glad, beholding that excellent feather of Garuda so cast off. And seeing that the feather was very beautiful, they said, let this bird be called Suparna, having fair feathers. And Purandara of 1,000 eyes, witnessing this wonderful incident, thought that bird to be some great being and addressed him thus. And King Indra said, O best of birds, I desire to know the limit of thy strength. I also desire eternal friendship with thee. Mahabharata, Astika Parva 33, Adi Parva. Oh, Astika Parva, okay. Yeah, it's right in the beginning. It means the Adi Parva is the 18 and the Astika Parva is of the 100. By the sounds of it, it seems like it's Ganguly. Yeah, as if it sounds like, you know, older. Yeah, then that's Ganguly. He might have, I'm not sure, but there is somehow or another wasn't published, so I don't know how, whatever happened with that. Okay. Where were we? Okay, Indra. And he dismisses that their bodies are effulgent by pointing out the opposite is true, because the demigods constantly anticipate some fall from their positions, right? Because effulgent means you're always happy, right? But if you're thinking that something may go wrong, this, that, then you're always feeling, you know, less effulgent. Yes. As Lord Krishna commented to his friend Uddhava, death is not at all pleasing, and since everyone is exactly like a condemned man being led to the place of execution, what possible happiness can people derive from material objects or the gratification they provide? Srimad Bhagavatam 11, huh?
Agreed.
Yes, 11, 10, 20. Therefore, according to Indra, the demigods are undeserving of worship because they are hardly better than ordinary men. Right? You know, you only live, you know, 300,000 years. That's it. You know? What's the big deal? Yeah. Because for them, it's only 100 years. Yeah, yeah. 19. You must also know that my brother, Lord Upendra, intentionally disregarded me by taking from heaven the Sudharma hall and the Parijata flower and bringing them to the earth. Right? Even though he's his brother, still, when Krishna came with Satyabhama, he still took the Parijata and the Sudharma hall. Right? And brought them to earth, right? But what he's not quite catching is brought him to earth so that one could look at him that way, but what was the place where he brought him on earth? Dwarka, which means the spiritual world. So they actually were taken higher. But still, you could look at it, that, you know, element from the social standpoint.
So he feels richer.
not necessarily bitter. He's just pointing out is that you're saying I'm getting all this mercy from my brother, you know, but my brother even takes all these things and takes them to the earth. So, you know, he's taking that to the earth. He instead of fighting with Bali, he just tricks him. You know, I get the stuff back, but, you know, it's by trick rather than, you know, an honorable fight. You know, like that. Here, Indra refused to claim that among the demigods, he has a special favor of the Lord, right? Because the Lord came and took these things. And, you know, he's doing the other... They're all coming out and fighting, you know, with their weapons and their armies and that. And Krishna's on Garuda with his wife, right?
Yeah.
And defeating them easily, single-handedly, right? You know. So... Yeah.
And he doesn't bring up the story of the
I'm not sure. We'll find out as we go. That one may be really too embarrassing. Here, Indra refutes the claim that among the demigods, he has a special favor of the Lord. The supreme person whom Indra knows as his brother, Upendra, appeared on earth in his original identity, Sri Krishna. To favor the Yadus and his wives in Dwarka, Krishna removed from heaven the Sudharma assembly hall and the Parijata, the flower that grows only in Indra's realm. So that makes it very special there, but now it's on earth, and what's the specialness? You know, because there's what it does, but there's uniqueness that only you have that. You know, that's the... I'm not sure. Generally these kind of things is then when the pastime's over, they'll go back to wherever they're from. You know. But his point is that, you know, because they're saying you're always with the Lord, he's always being fed. He's saying no, but he, you know, these other things happen. Right? But we understand these are because of the mentality. So then they happen. But he's pointing out is that he's not necessarily always the recipient of mercy in this form that's one would take as glorious. You know, but also an element of Hari, where the Lord takes away, because being a neophyte and being attached, then these things happen. Yeah, it's not that it's not mercy, but from this we can just see is that there's higher elements. The Lord once went to the heavenly planet to present an earring to Aditi, the mother of the demigods, and his wife Satyabhama also went with him. There is a special flowering tree called the Parijata, which grows only in the heavenly planets, and Satyabhama wanted this tree. Just to please his wife, like an ordinary husband, the Lord brought back the tree, and this enraged Vajri, or the controller of the thunderbolt. Indra's wives inspired him to run after the Lord to fight, right? Because because they're looking at it just someone from earth comes and takes something from the heavenly planet. That's not right. You know, one is they'll be looking at it from the position of, it's not correct, because the humans are supposed to respect the demigods. So for them to come and take the things, the share of the demigods, that would be wrong according to religion. So on that side, it's right. But then there's also the element of the prestige. Right? Now, if Krishna had taken it himself, then it would be another thing. But he was there with his wife. His wife asked for it. It wasn't that he came and said, oh, I want to take this for my wife. His wife asked for it. And then he's acting. So then now what's the natural response? Indra will act because his wives are saying, right? Like that. Indra's wives inspired to run after the Lord to fight. And Indra, because he was a henpecked husband and also a fool. Right? See, being henpecked is one thing, then there's being a fool. Right? You know, in other words, henpecked is standard. Yes. Fool, now that's yeah. He listened to them and dared to fight with Krishna. He was a fool on this occasion because he forgot that everything belongs to Krishna. There was no fault on the part of the Lord, even though he took away the tree from the heavenly kingdom. But because Indra was henpecked, dominated by his beautiful wives like Sachi, he became a fool. just as all persons who are dominated by their wives are generally foolish. Indra thought, right, this one thing is that that's the culture that they're following, but it's another thing to actually be. In other words, it should appear he's henpecked, but he shouldn't actually be like that. So Krishna appears henpecked, but it's only because of their devotion and wanting to please, therefore he acts in this way. Indra thought that Krishna was a henpecked husband who only by the will of his wife Satyabhama took away the property of heaven. And therefore he thought that Krishna could be punished. Footnote 25. Sri Harivamsa 269 states that when Narada had come previously as Krishna's messenger to ask Indra for the Parijata flower for Queen Satyabhama, Indra had expressed concern that his brother Krishna seemed to have become degraded by association with the residents of earth. In particular, Indra thought that Krishna was coming too much under the control of women. Right? 16,108 wives, right? You know, Indra does not have that many wives. Right? You know, so he's thinking, you know, he'll start to think like this because, you know, they're familiar. It's his brother. So therefore he's, you know, and he's the older brother, right? This is his younger brother, right? You know. He forgot that the Lord is the proprietor of everything, cannot be henpecked. The Lord is fully independent, and by his will only, he can have hundreds and thousands of wives like Satyabhama. He was not, therefore, attached to Satyabhama because she was a beautiful wife, but he was pleased with her devotional service and thus wanted to reciprocate the unalloyed devotion of his devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam 335 Purport. So that's the thing, is because of her devotion, he wanted to do something nice for her. So that means that you would do that. She's serving as a wife, so you reciprocate and please as one would the wife. Right? Does that make sense? So it's natural. That's the medium that the devotion is being expressed through. So that's the medium in which that devotion is returned. That affection is returned. Right? You know, just like in the, you know, amongst the Yadus, you know, they're sitting in the assembly hall and discussing management and administration and, you know, all these things. He reciprocates on that platform. The cowherd boys are just yelling and screaming and running around and all that. He reciprocates on that platform. Does that make sense? So it's not that he's henpecked because she's a beautiful wife and he's worried about losing her or anything like this. No, it's because of her devotion. Because, like I said, you're going to have hundreds of thousands. Right? He's just showing 16,000 here. And, you know, it's not a problem.
Is when Indra sees Krishna as henpecked, is it because he himself is henpecked and he
yes,
sees
yes,
him?
Yes, 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 yes. It means you see through your own vision.
Yeah.
Like that. These affronts were particularly intolerable because Krishna brought the Sudharma and the Parijata to Dwarka on earth, planet of lesser beings where death is prominent. The imperishable Sudharma and Parijata should not have been subjected to such indignities. Narada had used Indra's possessing the Parijata flower as a reason for praising him, but Indra retorts that he has only been embarrassed because of the flower. Sukadeva Goswami comments on this in the 10th canto. Even after Indra had bowed down to Lord Achyuta, touching his feet with the tips of his crown, and begged the Lord to fulfill his desire, that exalted demigod, having achieved his purpose, chose to fight with the Supreme Lord. What ignorance there is among the gods! To hell with their opulence! Srimad Bhagavatam 10:59-41. Right. So even though they're begging for, you know, like this, that he's the Supreme Lord, and the next moment they totally forget that and are fighting with him because of, you know, losing the things that they're begging him for. Right. So that's the position. Krishna's having stolen these two treasures suggests that Krishna is more favorable to the devotees in Dwarka than to Indra, whom he does not hesitate to shame. Right? So this is giving an indication of where, you know, these things go. Because still, here's the thing, he's giving opulence to the devotees because of his being pleased with them. Right? So that aspect is there. Right? So it's not an unviable position. They're just showing us that if you're saying we're the recipients of mercy, no, but you know, these other residents, they're receiving more. Text 20. He ruined the worship the cowherds had been offering me for many years. He burnt down my favorite forest, the vast Kandava.
It's hard.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
And this is your brother.
Yeah.
Indra here continues to refute, right? He's his brother, out of, as he says, devotion of the parents, not necessarily because of Indra. You know, like that. Because he doesn't, you don't hear Balaram complaining about these things.
No.
Like that. Indra here continues to refute Narada Muni's claim that the Lord, quote, always treats you with respect. Right, so each item that either the king has said that Narada Muni goes there and then he states, all those things then he's one by one refuting. Yeah, so basically it shows that it's the pure devotion that makes things work. It's not the endeavor, it's not even the devotional service itself. It's the mood in which that service is rendered. Right? Indra disagrees that the Lord always treats you with respect, right? Because he's the older brother. He cites the lifting of Govardhan Hill and the burning of Kandava forest pastimes as evidence that he is the recipient of Krishna's scorn, not his mercy. The Srimad Bhagavatam, in contrast, shows how the Lord's mercy can take many different forms. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Indra, it was out of mercy that I stopped the sacrifice meant for you. You were greatly intoxicated by your opulence as King of Heaven, and I wanted you to always remember me. A man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. Indra, you may now go. Execute my order and remain in your appointed position as King of Heaven, but be sober without false pride." Bhagavatam 10:27, 15 through 7. So he's showing it actually is mercy, but he's pointing out the positive effects and saying that there's that this mercy, but Indra's pointing out the negative. But it's actually still mercy, right? So all these different things that they're saying, no, I don't have, it's still mercy. Right? Yes?
For example, Indra, he gets this sport from Krishna, but he doesn't see it as a mercy. Will this be still considered mercy? Or even
it is mercy, it's just you can't take advantage of it. But it's not that he didn't at the time take it as mercy. It's just he's pointing out, you're saying he's always respectful to me, but here he dealt like this. Though it was for Indra's benefit. The key point here is that the Lord bestows his mercy equally upon all in proportion with their mentality. Srila Prabhupada explains by way of analogy. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:29, "I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service to me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him." We can understand this fact by a simple example. The king or government is equal to all citizens. Therefore, if a citizen capable of receiving special favors from the government is offered such favors, this does not mean that the government is partial. One who knows how to receive favors from the authority can receive them, but one who does not neglects these favors and does not receive them. There are two classes of men, the demons and the demigods. The demigods are fully aware of the Supreme Lord's position, and therefore they are obedient to him. But even if demons know about the supremacy of the Lord, they purposely defy his authority. Therefore, the Lord makes distinctions according to the mentality of the living being. But otherwise, he is equal to everyone. Like a desire tree, the Lord fulfills the desires of one who takes shelter of him. But one who does not take such shelter is distinct from the surrendered soul. One who takes shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord is favored by the Lord, regardless of whether such a person is a demon or a demigod. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.23.8. Right, so we see Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, they're demons, but they're favored by the Lord because of this devotion. So it doesn't matter. If the devotion is there, you're favored. Otherwise, then it's only by your good work you're favored. But here it's not that Indra can do bad work and then he'll maintain that favor in that way. Whoever you are, you do good work, you get good results. You do bad work, you get bad results. Very simple. It's very straightforward. Right? So the Lord, in this way, then, he's reciprocating. They're forgetting the Lord, dealing improperly, so then they get that reaction of that. Very simple. Indra's hidden glories are also partially hinted at by the Acharyas. There may be more to him than meets the eye. At first reading of the Govardhan Leela pastime, the Srimad Bhagavatam depicts a bristling Lord Indra letting out a stream of invectives at the cowherd boy Krishna. These coward men have acted inimically towards me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Martyam. Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, Pandita Maninam, but who is simply foolish, Agyam, arrogant, Stubtam, over-talkative, Vachalam, over-talkative child, Balisham. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.25.5. Indra wanted to rebuke Krishna as Vachalam because the Lord had presented many audacious arguments in the line of Karma Mimamsa and Shankya philosophy, even though he did not accept these arguments. Thus Indra called the Lord Balisha foolish. Indra called him Stubda because he had spoken boldly even in the presence of his own father. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.25.5 purport. Indra's statement has another layer of meaning, however. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, through the insults of Indra, goddess Saraswati is actually praising Krishna. The Acharya explains, Vachalam means one who can speak according to Vedic authority. Balisham means free from pretension, just like a child. Shtabdham means that he bows down to no one because there is no one for him to offer homage to. Agyam means that there is nothing more for him to know because he is omniscient. Pandita Maninam means that he is highly honored by the knowers of the Absolute Truth. And Krishnam means he is the Supreme Absolute Truth, whose transcendental form is full of eternity and ecstasy. Martyam means that although he is the Absolute Truth, he nevertheless appears in this world as a human being out of affection for his devotees. Thus, although Indra attempted to criticize Sri Krishna, the Lord's transcendental character is in fact impeccable. And this chapter will demonstrate how Indra came to recognize the position of the Lord. So even though he's trying to criticize, when he spoke, Saraswati arranged the words in such a way that they appear to be a criticism, but on the other hand, they're all praises. Just like I think the Acharyas also take all the 100 insults of Shishupal and show how they're actually the same thing. Like he says, he's, without varna. Avarna means, because, one day he's a kshatriya, the next day he's a vaishya, the next day he's, driving a chariot, and the next day he's, the messenger. So what varna is he? So the point is God is beyond varna. He has no varna. So it's actually a glorification. Like that, yes.
Didn't mean to glorify.
No, no.
He was insulting. Was Indra also insulting?
Means it says here that Saraswati is actually praising Krishna. So means Shishupal is intending to, but at the same time as, they're devotees. So there's the other aspect. So it's just a matter of, because a pastime has to have something to make it function. Just like as we see in the next chapter in Bhagavatam, that the residents of Dwarka, because they're all demigods and great saints and sages, how could they insult Brahmins? They would never do that. right? Because we see later when they go to Pushkar? No. It's just on the other side of Dwarka. It's on the mainland there, at the ocean. They went there. They're doing all these big sacrifices, giving everything to the Brahmins, charity, worship, taking permission from them to eat afterwards, the remnants from the sacrifice, everything perfect. You can't get better. So it was by the Lord's will that they behaved badly. And these great sages, they could never get upset by a bunch of kids playing. But then they cursed them. Right? Some kids are playing. Why would they curse and destroy the whole dynasty? Right? So it's just the Lord's will, because one, the demigods have to go back to their posts because the pastime is over. And two, they're the Lord's protected family. Who could defeat them? Right? So no one else could defeat them. So, and it's, they're just going to sit around and get old and decrepit and all die. Or, how is it going to work here? So therefore, it's by the Lord's arrangement. And because no one could get rid of them but themselves. Therefore, then, and why would they? They would always respect, they've always cooperated now for all this time. They've never done you never hear of any difficulties. So then, they have to be drunk. Right? Then something could come up, because then they don't remember who each other is. So it's all the Lord's arrangement. So these things, also there's that aspect of the arrangement. So that some other aspects can come out. But whichever one you're looking at the time, that's the one that's discussed. Because all those points are valid. So one could say, but this is contradictory, but within the Lord, all contradiction is resolved. And so you can see all these different sides like that. Depending on which we want to establish, you bring out the one or bring out the other.
Yes.
When we're turning these words around, does that relate to the Aviva Shakti as well?
It's further meanings, because you have many times, in the Aviva Shakti, then there's also a matter of how much you know. Does that make sense? Because it's just like the root means all the words of in the classical Sanskrit will, in one sense, have their roots within the Vedic Sanskrit. And in there, then there's all kinds of obscure meanings. Generally, they use obscure meanings. It's more fun. Right? It's just like if you're talking with someone you don't know, you talk very directly. If you talk to someone you know, you can say all kinds of hidden meanings. And it's more fun. So like that, then the deeper the meaning. So the acharya is knowing, the language so well, knowing the attitudes and that, then they can find what are these deeper understandings.
Can this also happen in the English language? I mean, if you know someone, you can use the language.
Yeah, you could. But at the same time, do you have anybody else who would understand
that? Yes. I mean, if we have some too close, qualified people, sometimes
of course.
In a way that nobody else can actually.
Yes, of course. Maybe it was said that, what's his name? I think when Subal and Krishna would discuss things together, no one else could understand what they're talking about. It was so confidential. Mm-hmm. Whatever they were saying, no one knew what they were talking about. It's kind of like, Sorry, what? Devotees. Yeah. Yes. So that's the thing, is that there's all these tastes in the element of culture that you can appreciate so much more. So if one understands that, then there's so much more to gain. Like taking down, take a shot, it's not just a matter of you're trying to eat, quickly and not get too involved, because eating is sense gratification, so it's maya, so then the whole, like this, those elements, I from one sense, okay, if you're looking at that from yourself, okay, nice, but there's so much more that can be there, because it's not renunciation. You're dealing with Krishna, it's not about renunciation, it's about appreciating Krishna, the devotees, that whole interaction, the serving, the eating, you know, the appreciation, all these different things. So there's so much more that can be gained with that. So that's the... The second pastime spoke of in this verse is the burning of the Kandava forest. The pastime is chronicled at length in Mahabharata, section 2-4, Kandava Daha Parva, Adi Parva, and serves numerous purposes. While Indra interprets the burning of this forest, which he had pledged to protect, as a sign of disfavor, the pastime serves in equal respects to glorify Indra as the giver of boons to his own illustrious son, Arjuna. After fierce battle pitting Krishna and Arjuna against all the demigods, the following conciliation takes place. It was thus that the illustrious god of fierce rays, Agni, having grown in strength, consumed the forest of Kandava with the help of Krishna and Arjuna for the good of the world. And Agni, having drunk several rivers of fat and marrow, became highly gratified and showed himself to Arjuna. Then Purandara, surrounded by the Maruts, descended from the firmament and addressed Partha and Keshava, said, "You have achieved a feat that a celestial even could not. Ask ye each a boon that is not obtainable by any man. I have been gratified with you." Right. So in other words, ask some boon, don't ask for something that anybody else can get. Ask for something special, right? Vaishampayana continued, "When Partha asked from Indra all his weapons, at this Shakra of great splendor, having fixed the time for giving them, said, 'When the illustrious Madhava becomes pleased with thee, then, O son of Pandu, I will give thee all my weapons.'" Right? So when you please Krishna, then, "O prince of Kuru's race, I shall know when the time cometh. Even for thy austere asceticism, I will give thee all my weapons of fire and all my Vayavya weapons, and thou also wilt accept them all of me." Then Vasudeva asked that his friendship with Arjuna might be eternal. Right? So that's not an ordinary boon, because he can't be eternally friends with anybody, right? Everybody's going to, you know, except in the spiritual world. So that's not something of this world. The chief of the celestials granted unto the intelligent Krishna the boon he desired. Right, so Arjuna wanted something for his service, and Krishna was just something based on the relationship. "And having granted these boons unto Krishna and Arjuna, the Lord of the Maruts, accompanied by the celestials, ascended to heaven, having so spoken to Hutasana, one whose food is sacrificial butter." Let's see how we do it. Yeah. Thus we see that Krishna loves to glorify his devotees. Indra, as witnessed in this verse and the next, plays a special role in the Lord's pastimes by helping to magnify the glories of his other devotees. Okay. So therefore these come out, then we see the glories of the other devotees, the special things. So it's all part of the thing. But there's something to learn from it, that there's some weakness we have to be very careful with in our devotional service. At the same time as, then by that, then all these wonderful pastimes can take place. Yeah.